All right, welcome back to a Labor Day Talking Baseball. Marty Lurie is off today. Bill Lasky sitting in for him. And my next guest is a good friend of mine. He's written baseball for four decades professionally. He is from Novato. Let's welcome in John Shea. Good afternoon, John. How are you today?
Hello, Bill. How are you doing?
Good talking to you, my friend. I haven't talked to you in a while, and it's great to have you on. And, of course, I got to go right to the book. Of course, you've written a couple other good books, Confessions of a Thief about Ricky Henderson and Magic by the Bay about the 89 World Series. But Willie Mays, number 24, Life Stories and Lessons from the Say Hey Kid. How cool was that to sit down with Willie Mays for many, many hours and talk baseball?
Man, it's really the project of a lifetime, Bill. It really is. The time and the access he gave me, which allowed me to, you know, filter off and go to these other Hall of Famers or opponents or, you know, just tons of people in and out of the game who shared their stories, and I brought them back to Willie, and, you know, the words from everybody else kind of complimenting or supplementing what Willie is saying, and we put together something that is quite unique, and Willie was so engaged throughout the process from the very beginning, and is always asking about it. And I was over at his house the other day, and he's doing well, and you know, no baseball, of course. Otherwise, he'd be at the ballpark with you. But it's a different time, so he's adjusting like everybody else. But man, it was a wonderful ride, and it was probably 15 years in the making, and. You know, to look back, it was so glorious to be able to, you know, sit down with just greats of the game, especially Willie. You're right. It was probably more than 100 hours we spent together on the project.
Yeah. And you know what? Congratulations also. The New York Times bestseller was 13th and also a full-page ad in Baseball Digest. I used to love reading Baseball Digest and Sporting News. Those are the greatest back then and still are now. But, again, you know, these are things that, of course, you put Willie Mays on a cover and everybody's going to read him because he was a glorified superstar. And everybody wants to read your work. And, you know, again, one more thing about Willie Mays. I mean, when you start talking to him, I mean, you must have had booklets of information of stories that he told you because talking to him every day, as much as you and I both have, even off the cuff of writing a book, he's so spot on with his stories, and his memory is fantastic. Tell me about how many books and yellow pages you had information on.
No, you're right. He would say something. I said, come on, Willie. And then I would go home and go to Baseball Reference and find out he was exactly right. It was a two-run double in the gap and, you know, on the 9th of September. And he would be spot on. And, I mean, you're probably the same way. You probably remember sequences, at-bats, dates, duels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like it was yesterday. And that's the same with Willie and so many other folks. You know, whether it's Maury Wills, Reggie Jackson, Barry Bonds, or McCovey, or Cepeda, Hank Aaron, I had the pleasure to speak with, you know, 30-plus Hall of Famers. And they spin these stories, and you're just amazed that, so wait a minute, this didn't happen yesterday. It happened 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Exactly.
And like Carl Erskine was warming up next to Branca in 51. And I'm talking to him on the phone for an hour about, you know, do you face Bobby Thompson or do you go to, you know, Mays on Deck, you know, the young 20-year-old out of Fairfield, Alabama. And I said, oh, my gosh, it's just wild to be able to be the guy who put this on paper and, you know, share the stories. Because, you know, a lot of books have been written, but so many books tell the stories of what these guys said when they were playing. Yeah. Not 40, 50, 60 years later. In retrospect, they look back and they might have a different view on it. And that's what this is all about. So it's 100% all new material. Nothing between quotes was ever seen elsewhere. In other words, anything that was used previously was off limits for this book. So it's all, you know, exclusive new stuff. And I think that's the beauty of it. And that's what Willie wanted.
Well, today is Labor Day, and I'm talking to John Shea on a Labor Day talking baseball. And Willie Mays' name came in news the other day, and of course, it's a record that someone broke, and I want your thoughts on it. Mike Trout hit his 300th home run, 200 stolen bases, faster than any other Major League Baseball player, and he's not even 30 years old yet. 60 games fewer than Willie Mays. How can you do a comparison on both these guys?
Yeah, that's a great one. In fact, there's a whole chapter in the book about modern-day stats and how Willie's stats would be viewed in the lens of today's thinking and analytics and advanced numbers. Mm-hmm. And I spoke with Mike Trout about it, and I spoke with Willie about Trout and vice versa. And because he's, you know, he's the modern-day Mantle. He's the modern-day Mays. He could do it all, you know, run, hit for power, field, throw, you know, the five elements of a superstar, all at a high level, though Trout kind of slowed down the running game this year and in recent years. Hasn't ever come close to his first full season's total, but still, he dominates a game the way Mantle and Willie did because he could beat you in so many different ways. But, you know, Willie came up at 20, he a year out of high school, spent a couple years in the military. You know, I guess, you know, if you want to compare, obviously, Willie was not only the greatest all-around player, but he was the greatest entertainer. And do you say that about Trout? I mean, obviously, Willie had the flash and the basket catch and the smile and put everybody at ease. He never got booed at Ebbets Field or Dodger Stadium. He was loved everywhere, universally. The Giants had the best road attendance in the 60s, even though they got to one World Series. They had the best overall record, by the way, in the regular season. Marshall had the most wins in the 60s, but they always, as you know, finished second place. Yeah. But every time they visited a town, as Felipe Alou told me, it was always the newspaper headlines would say, you know, Willie Mays and company comes by, you know, and everyone knew their place. Everyone knew Mays was the guy, even though they had a bunch of great players on those teams. Mays was always the one leading the way.
Well, John, you have covered professional baseball for over 30 years, and two people have passed, Hall of Famers, Tom Seaver, and then yesterday, Lou Brock. Tom Seaver was 75. Lou Brock passed away at 81 yesterday, and I know you covered him. You've talked to both these gentlemen. Tell me your thoughts on both of these losses in the Hall of Fame, as well as the human element. Both these guys were super on and off the field.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'd love to hear what you have to say about them. But my experience with both of them, I mean, I wrote the book with Ricky Henderson, his autobiography in the 90s. And Lou Brock was a big part of that, obviously, because Ricky broke his single season and career records. And Lou was such a wonderful man. He always spoke about being the gunslinger in the Wild West. That was his approach to base stealing. And he always needed to be on second base. First base meant nothing to him. It was all, you know, he broke Maury Wills' record, 104 steals, got 118 at age 35. Mm-hmm. And that's how good he was for a consistent amount of time. You know, obviously I spoke with him. Then I spoke with Tom Seaver in the initial stages of the Willie Mays book because they were teammates in 72 and 73. And, you know, Seaver right in his prime and Mays on the back end. But Mays, the mentor, you know, just the superstar, you know, playing out his years in New York when Seaver and Matlock and Kuzman were leading the way to that 73 World Series. And Willie was really a leader on that team. So the stuff that Seaver told me about him and, you know, how they would have these pregame chats, the same that Willie had with Marshall and Perry in San Francisco, he was now doing it with Seaver in New York. And Seaver was kind of blown away because he said, nobody ever did that with me pregame. A position player would never come up to me and talk about strategy. But that was Mays, and, you know, the leader and the captain and all that stuff. But, yeah, those are just two major losses. And I was over at Willie's house the other day, and we were talking about Seaver, and he spoke about how, you know, they just spent so much time together talking. And, you know, the Fresno kid, you know, with the San Francisco Giants, and, you know, Seaver telling stories about how he used to go to exhibition games. Apparently the Giants played some in Fresno back in the day. And young Tommy, you know, followed McCovey and Mays and them. And then later is Mays' teammate. And just terrific ball players, like you said, but also terrific gentlemen off the field in so many ways.
And in so many ways, you could sit down and talk to them. And I met them both through my years of playing with the San Francisco Giants. And, you know, you shake their hand and, you know, coming up as a young kid in my early 20s, watching these two guys play, you know, watching them pitch. Tom Seaver just had that perfect motion. And then Lou Brock, every time he got on first, the first thing he said, when is he going to go? You know, is he going to go first pitch, second pitch? You know he's going to go. And the slides, the hook slides, and the hands behind the bat coming through, he was just so elegant as a base runner. But I want to move forward to this year with the San Francisco Giants. You've been covering them. You were at the park yesterday, and you wrote a great article about the urgency of the Giants right now, and we both know this. 19 games left to go in the season. And one of the things I took out of your article was what Gabe Kapler said. We're managing games with a sense of urgency without overindulging players, meaning we're not overusing these players. When I first read this, the first thing I said is, I thought this urgency was game one because you only have 60-game season, you know. But I can see the urgency now. I mean, they're trying to chase a wild card position, and these games against Arizona, especially today, a great pitching matchup. But what did you take out of that when he said that?
Well, yeah, you're right. It was from day one. And as he said, opening day win is just as important as a September win. But it was such a great unknown back when this thing started. Was there going to be a 60-game season? Were we going to complete it? You know, who is Gabe Kapler? What kind of players does he have? Is he developing or is he trying to win now? And he probably didn't even know the answers to that because he didn't, you know, see a lot of those guys in action since March. They only had two exhibition games against the A's, and then it was opening day. So, what, a shortened spring training, a shortened season, you just don't know mathematically what's going to transpire. And then all of a sudden you wake up and the season is half over and you're not eliminated. And, you know, unlike the last three teams the Giants have been involved in. So it's a matter of, well, shoot, look at us. We got all these hitters. We got three or four guys hitting 300 plus. We got home run hitters. And who would have thunk it in San Francisco since the early 2000s? I mean, that was non-existent for the most part. And you got a pretty good bullpen most days, and suddenly the rotation isn't going three or four innings anymore as they did in the first few weeks. And now they're, you know, Cueto went into the sixth inning, and that's enough because suddenly you have only three or four guys instead of the day before with Trevor Cahill comes out in the third, and now you got 7-8 guys that you're having to be called. And but the beauty of it is the bullpen is good enough. And the rotation, you know, most of the time lately has kept them competitive. And then the hitters kind of take up the slack for any defensive woes or pitching woes. And, you know, they got it. I thought it was kind of goofy yesterday that we spoke with Gabe Kapler on the 25th anniversary of Cal Ripken breaking Lou Gehrig's streak, and then he writes up a lineup without three of his best players, Belt and Crawford and Dickerson. I said, well, you know, you're praising this guy, and the way he explained it was it's not about playing every day, it's about being fresh every day. And that's obviously Belt came in and hit the pinch homer, and Dickerson came in and made that diving catch. So what he's doing now is working.
It sure did. Now, you know, looking toward the schedule, it's not an easy schedule. There's no doubt about it. You're playing the Padres seven times, four in San Diego, and then the last three games of the season here, and you got Colorado for four. I mean, the urgency is definitely there, and you can't take the Mariners lightly. They made some great trade, got some really young talent, and it's working. They've won five in a row playing today and Labor Day, and then they're coming in Tuesday and Wednesday. You can't take the Mariners lightly, John, and you know that.
No, you can't. I mean, you probably took the, not you, but generally took the Diamondbacks lightly, and they won that first game of the series. And, you know, that was the game that the Giants had the bases loaded, and Dubon was doubled off second.
Yeah.
And we saw so much of that early on with the defense especially. A lot of that, I think, had to do with, you know, Belt was on the injured list to begin the season. Crawford wasn't playing every day. Longoria. But once those three guys became a permanent fixture in large part anyway, for the most part, they, you know, in, the hamstring for Crawford, he's in the lineup today. But once those guys started playing most innings, then the defense solidified. There was more order defensively because it was pretty chaotic when guys were just moving all around, out of position. And now it looks pretty good. The defense is much better than it was in the first month. But you're right. The wild card race is a crapshoot, and you know I count six teams that are eligible who aren't in first or second because the top two teams in every division go. Then you got mm-hmm. six teams vying for two spots. So the okay. Giants need to get hot. They can't stay under 500 as they've been since they were the 11th game of the season. It was when they dropped below 500. They haven't gotten back since.
We're speaking to John Shea on a Labor Day Talking Baseball. Marty Leary's out. Bill Lasky's in. And I tell you what, let's talk about one of the hottest guys in this lineup. You and I have been watching him ever since he came up as a rookie, and that's Brandon Belt. I've never seen him in a 19-game stretch, and I know you haven't either. And now he's hitting 340, 27 for 55 in those 19 games, 6 home runs, 8 doubles, a triple, 11 walks, and we know how great he is at home plate and seeing the strike zone. Tell me your thoughts about how hot Brandon Belt is right now.
Yeah, I think it's a comfort factor. It's a confidence factor. This coaching staff has believed in this guy since March, and this is an all-new coaching staff. And all they had to look at before was the numbers, and they say, wow, look at that on-base percentage. Yeah, the batting average is low. Yeah, he's been injured. But what could he do? If we have total faith in him, and total faith means, hey, it's okay if you strike out on 3-2 looking, where maybe the previous coaching staff didn't appreciate that so much. Now the philosophy is, hey, if the pitch isn't there where you could drive the ball, where you could crush the ball, it's okay. It's like Kepler played with Manny back in Boston. That kind of drove people crazy. Why don't you swing, Manny? It wasn't a pitch I could crush. He said, okay, I guess that makes sense. Even a strike, low in the zone, away, or too far in, maybe that's not in your happy zone, and you're not going to swing. And this coaching staff is completely fine with that. And they love the fact that he walks a lot and has just his expert vision of the strike zone. He's so good at it. And maybe he's a lot more appreciated because of that. And maybe that confidence level is pushing him to another level, a level that he has tried to reach forever. It was always, this is going to be my year, this is going to be my year. Well, something always happens. He gets hurt or something else, and it's not that year. But maybe finally, even though this year is only 2 months, maybe this is finally his year.
Well, I tell you what, Brandon Belt, he always amazed me. I always thought he would hit, 20, 25 home runs. He's got 7 now, of course, in a short season. That's probably around 15 or 18 if we talked 162-game schedule. But, again, a couple guys that are really catching my eye, and they're both young players, and that's Mauricio Dubon as well as Joey Bart. Tell me your thoughts on these two young players and the availability as they're playing pretty much every day now, and we're seeing pluses as well as minuses, and the negatives are a lot less than we thought. The positives are weighing a lot more.
Yeah, I think both are, especially Dubon is taking a lot of abuse on social media from fans who maybe want too much too quickly. I mean, this is a guy who's really never played the outfield, and he's playing, Willie Mays' old position. And that ain't easy for a guy who's played short and second his whole life, but he's such a good instinctual ball player, and never mind what he did in the eighth inning. We got doubled off the other day. That happens, and he knew it right. Obviously, he was putting his head down and running. You never put your head down and running. You got to see the ball. You got to see the play. You got to anticipate. You got to be smarter than that. He copped up to it, and to his credit, he went right on Zoom and confessed everything, and he didn't hide. And in these days, it's easier to say, no, I don't want to talk today, as opposed to when we were in the clubhouse, we'd just walk up to you. It's harder to say no, but it's a different world, and Dubon, fessed up. And I like the guy because you just never know what's going to happen. He could ignite a team offensively or defensively. He is making diving catches. He's got a decent arm, decent base runner for the most part. I keep thinking about that play, but offensively, he can provide some punch. I think they've worked with him you know, that big leg kick I always wondered about. Probably worked in high school and low minors, but now you're with the big boys, and they're going to fool you if you have that big leg kick and you're not the big power guy, and he isn't. So I think they're trying to tame him a little bit with the stance and approach, and I think it's working out. He seems to get like a big hit most every game he's playing. But Bart, man, that's going to take time. I mean, that's as he says, catching is his priority. It's not hitting, and there's so much to it. And Posey had Benji Molina as a mentor, and Bart doesn't really have a mentor who played, you know, 10 years in the bigs behind the plate, because Posey opted out. And maybe next year he gets that mentorship and turns it up a notch. But, you know, defensively, other than that one clunker in the Johnny Cueto game, I think he's been pretty good. We haven't seen enough of his arm, maybe. But for the most part, I think he works well with pitchers, and he's going to hit. I mean, we saw him in the minors, in the fall league, in spring training. And if going to these spring training games every day and watching the BP and watching the simulated games and the inter-squad games, you just knew he was one of the best hitters on the team. So when he struggles, you know it's a case of, well, he's young, he'll get over it. Because I think both those guys are going to develop pretty nicely for this team.
We're speaking to John Shea here on Labor Day, and you know, we just got done talking about Dubon and Joey Bart, and one of the things that is coming back into the game, and you're going to laugh at me when I say it, Manny Sanguin and Tony Pena with a one knee bent under the catcher with the leg out to get the low strike. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, well, this is new. And I'm like, no, it hasn't. This is Manny Sanguin, because he was the first one that did it. What do you think of that in a new style of catching?
Yeah, and I covered Benito Santiago in his first couple of years in San Diego when I lived down there. And that guy was just perfected the throw from your knees, and nailed the guy at second. I'd love to hear from you. I love Sanguin, and you know, Bench was a traditional. You know, he invented the bare hand behind the back, and Pena with the great arm. But you're right. It's all about framing, and it's all about steal a strike, but does that make you as athletic as you should be? Because your flexibility isn't the same. What's your take?
Well, I like it in the windup. I don't like it when there's runners on base. I just think I like the traditional in the crouch, and I like that. Mm-hmm. As nobody on, I'm a sinker ball or slider pitcher, so I want to steal those pitches on the knees and on the black, and I think that's what helps. But I'm just not sold on when there's runners on base where they can come up and throw and it's mostly on your arm, and that's about the only thing that I kind of difference in my opinion on that. But I like it with stealing a strike here and there for the pitchers. It's great. Last thing, John, is one of the biggest things we talk about this year is a 60-game season. What do you think about the bubble in Texas and Los Angeles, Southern California? Do you think that's going to help or hurt?
Well, I don't know how it could hurt. It seems to be working in the NBA, and where those guys just don't leave the premises until their season is done, whereas the Giants and A's and all these other teams hop on a plane, they go to a hotel, sometimes with just people who are vacationing, and that exposes them. Sometimes they're in a hotel just by themselves. Sometimes they're in a hotel with other guests. That they don't know, and they congregate in the big room, or they do all their meetings on the team bus, as Kapler said, or even at the ballpark. There's limited time at the ballpark. You don't hang out as much pregame or postgame. And Dickerson said yesterday, you'd be amazed how much we don't really spend time together or talk to each other because of all the protocols. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way, because you know what the travel schedule is over 60 games, but you don't in the postseason. You don't know where you're going tomorrow based on today's game and based on what the other series are going on. So I I think that's probably the only way to do it.
Yeah, and especially in the Midwest, so many teams were going out to casinos and all different type of entertainment and then coming back. And, you know, look what the Clevenger did. They got them out right out of there, you know. So
yeah.
I just think it's a protection aspect, especially now going into the playoffs and to protect 16 teams. I think it's a great idea, and I think it'll help the teams and manage a lot of the protocol better. John Shea, I appreciate your time on a Labor Day. Giant fans, any kind of baseball fans, you got to get out and purchase Willie Mays 24, Life Stories and Lessons from the Say Hey Kid. John Shea, a fantastic writer. And again, John, have a great day. It's always great catching up with you, my friend, and take care of yourself.
You too, Bill. Thanks a lot.
All right. That was John Shea on Talking Baseball on a Labor Day pregame show. It's Bill Lasky filling in for Marty Lurie. We're going to be right back on KNBR, the sports leader.